From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
We're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. All takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race.
No
compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get some pencils and pens and some recycled paper, because you need to write down this information. This isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the BLM office. If you have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep that pencil and pen handy and listen for contact information in the latter half of the show. Let's get right on into news about that BLM office. Earth First occupies Pinedale, Wyoming BLM office after the Round River Rendezvous. That's right. About 40 members of the Earth First Environmental Group took over a U.S. Bureau of Land Management office to protest oil and gas development on public lands in Wyoming. The occupation lasted about 3 hours. It ended peacefully after local BLM managers agreed to a statement saying the agency agreed that the environment was more important than economic profit and that it would pursue environmentally sensitive energy sources. I felt the statement was something that I could agree to, said BLM field manager Prill Meacham. The group left peacefully and no arrests were made, Meacham said. According to the Sublet Examiner, the public was blocked from entering the building during the protest because of protesters locking themselves to doors. The group occupied many of the offices in the building, reclining on the floor, sitting in chairs, and filling the hallways throughout the building. Some danced and sang. Protester Kristen Painter of Jackson said Earth First is concerned about the destruction she is sure will ensue from drilling, including depletion of water wells, a decrease in water quality, and the creation of a matrix of roads. They are handing out permits like candy, protester Mike Bowersox told the Sublet Examiner. Meacham said she was shocked by the protesters converging on the building. However, subsequent negotiations between the group and BLM officials were not confrontational, she said. I thought it was a very constructive session, actually, Meacham said. The statement the two sides agreed to stated, "We agree that the long-term environmental health is more important than economic gains. We agree that development of environmentally sensitive energy sources is a priority, and we are willing to work together towards those goals." While some of the protesters agreed to sign the statement, others refused, calling it a joke, but peacefully left the building, the Sublet Examiner reported. And moving on to Washington, protesters vow to stop old-growth logging. In a story by Eric Robinson of the Columbian newspaper, amid heavy security, more than a dozen environmental activists visited the Gifford Pinchot National Forest headquarters last Tuesday in Vancouver, Washington, to protest timber sales in old-growth forests. Armed with a new opinion poll showing 75% of the public opposes logging old-growth forests, the activists vowed to watch closely the progress of 23 timber sales in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. Activists said they were poised to stop old-growth trees from falling through civil disobedience campaigns that could include tree sits and road blockades. "We have people in the forest now who have been watching the timber sales for several months," activist Rebecca Smith said, "and we have people ready to go if the chainsaws run." "That isn't likely to occur anytime soon," Deputy Forest Supervisor Lynn Burdett said. "Many sales have been held up by lawsuits related to the protection of the threatened northern spotted owl and imperiled stocks of salmon. Some have been delayed by Northwest Forest Plan regulations that require forest managers to look for more than 1,000 species of plants and wildlife before approving timber sales. Even so, protesters said the Gifford Pinchon is offering more old growth than any other West Side National Forest in Washington. In a meeting that Tuesday between two of the protesters and Forest Supervisor Claire Lavendel, activist Steve Johnson and John Villela asked Lavendel to cancel planned sales that haven't been offered or buy back sales that have already been awarded. They also invited Lavendel to hike with them among one of the controversial sales near Mount Adams. "We're basically here to find out why this forest, out of all the forests in western Washington, is still logging old growth," Johnson told Lavendel during the meeting. Lavendel, along with Burdett, listened politely and asked a few questions of Johnson and Villela, including the activist's definition of old growth. Their answer, the definition pulled from the Forest Service's own documents, generally trees older than 180 years. Forest Service officials are quick to point out that the Northwest Forest Plan bans logging on more than 80% of the so-called spotted owl forests of western Washington, Oregon, and northern California, but they also acknowledge former President Bill Clinton considered an option that would have eliminated all logging of old growth. Clinton rejected that option because it offered only a negligible amount of timber to local mills during the first decade of the forest plan, which relied heavily on old growth to produce the 1 billion board feet per year that Clinton pledged. After getting wind of the protest Tuesday morning, law enforcement officials stepped up security. By the time 16 protesters motored up in a few automobiles, more than a dozen federal, state, and Vancouver police officers had staked out the area in front of the building. State and city police had placed barricades in front of Burnt Bridge Creek Park, closing it to the public for the duration of the protest. Activists were taken aback by the extent of the security measures. "We're outnumbered," said Kim Marks, an activist with the Cascadia Defense Network. During the last protest stage at the headquarters 3 years ago, four protesters chained themselves to the front doors of the building. This time, officials were taking no chances. "We're handling it as an incident, hoping it's going to be low-key," Forest spokeswoman Linda Turner said. "But we plan for the worst." And moving to Indiana, activists block road leading to Bloomington, Indiana Bluebird Tree Sit. In the morning, six activists with Buffalo Trace Earth First locked arms across the newly created road leading into the Bluebird Tree Sit. They intended to prevent any sort of heavy machinery from entering the site to evict the final tree sitter moss or do any more damage to the fragile forest ecosystem of the site. "We will not back down," said Rust, one of the activists locked across the road. "This fight is not over just because the state was able to move some of the tree sitters. We intend to prevent any machinery from entering the site today. Too many people care about this place just to let it die at the hands of profiteers at Herman and Associates." "The temporary road is only about a third of the distance that they need to go," said Mouse, another activist locked down. "The road is only the first step. They have to clear all the land as well. Our community are not quitters. We will not just let this one go away and chalk it as a loss. This fight is far from over. We don't care what zoning ordinances have been passed or what official body sanctioned this development. These things don't make a lick of difference to the trees and animals that live here, so we don't recognize their authority." One of the reasons that the activists locked down was to prevent any machinery from entering the forest to remove Moss, the remaining tree sitter. They feared that police will be rough and likely hurt him in their attempts to remove him from his perch. These fears stem from the way the other tree sitters were treated yesterday, and that Moss has had a rough night of harassment from Monroe County sheriffs. The cops on the site have honked their horns, ran their sirens, and even shot off fireworks to try to intimidate Moss into coming down. The other tree sitters had their platforms cut out from under them, trees knocked into safety lines with absolutely no regard to the activists' well-being or safety. "It is absolutely despicable that the sheriffs would resort to these tactics," said Mouse. "They are intentionally risking his life to pass the time through the night. These cops need their head examined, and they need to be reined in by their superiors." Moss was in high spirits at the top of the Bluebird Tree Sit. He has a hammock and a supply of food and water. Other than the harassment, the night passed without incident for him. As a final comment, Rust added, "You can jail the resistors, but you cannot jail the resistance. We will not go away." And in a related story, Bloomington, Indiana sheriffs moved in rapidly last weekend and manhandled the lockdown protesters. They used pain compliance holds and just plain treated people like they were rubber bands in order to force them to unlock for their own safety. The setup was, as I was told, six people used straight goo lockboxes to block the entire road. The two on the outside made use of conveniently placed sleeping dragon-type boxes that were sunk into storm grates to lock the line into place. When the police arrived, they started by cutting into a goo box to access the pin. They proceeded to get copious amounts of tar on themselves and got really frustrated, so they started to yank and pull at the people. They even used a crowbar down one of the protesters' boxes to try and break the pin. This obviously injured his arm very badly. Once they had yanked the two outside people off the dragons, they just threw the activists into a paddy wagon still attached to each other. This caused many contortions and considerable bruising to many of the activists, as arms do not bend very well when attached halfway in 2.5-foot-long pipes. Because of the extreme force they used on the people, they were able to remove the blockade in about 2 hours. The six, plus an on-site camera person, were arrested and booked on trespassing and resisting law arrest charges. They have all made bail as of now. And the last tree sitter is still in the top of the bluebird tree. The sheriffs are attempting to starve him out by cutting his supply line of water and food. The tree he is sitting in is entirely blocks their ability to access to build the access road into the proposed development. It is a very narrow causeway between two sinkholes. Any deviation will cause the road to sink into the hole. The sheriff said they plan to continue with construction on Monday morning, whether or not moss has come down. And in a further story by Doug Wilson of the Bloomington Herald-Times, 16 protesters charged with trespassing at Brown's Woods say they're not guilty and want jury trials to establish their innocence. We feel all charges should be dropped because what we are doing was in the best interest of the community, said Michael J. Englert, 30, at a demonstration held before arraignment hearings Monday morning for the 16 defendants. All 16 were charged with criminal trespass, a Class A misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail, after being arrested at Brown's Woods on Friday or Saturday. Lucille Bertaccio, 65, was charged with resisting arrest as well as criminal trespass. Close to 60 people participated in the peaceful demonstration, which started on the steps of the Monroe County Justice Building in Bloomington, Indiana, and included a lap around the courthouse square. The demonstrators carried signs with slogans such as "Drop all charges against the Bluebird 16," "Defending Bloomington's green space shouldn't be a crime," and "Civil disobedience, a respected tradition, Gandhi, Parks, and Moss." The latter was referenced to Indian social reformer Mohandas Gandhi and American civil rights activist Rosa Parks. Englert, also known as Moss, was the final tree sitter removed by police. He said he is aware of the tradition of civil disobedience includes acceptance of consequences for violating laws. "I'm willing to accept that, but would prefer that for charges to be dropped," Englert said. Frank Ambrose, the man accused of driving 10-inch spikes into trees at Morgan Monroe State Forest in June of last year, was one of the supporters at the demonstration. He said he was just visiting Bloomington and would return to Detroit after the arraignment hearings. Ambrose attended the hearings and appeared to be trying to keep the arraigned activists in good spirits. He made hand signals and funny faces to friends seated on the other side of the packed courtroom, which has seats for about 50 people, forcing some supporters to remain in the hallway behind a closed door. "There are a great number of people being excluded from the hearing," defendant Mark Haggerty complained to Judge Pro Tem Barry Brown. "We want them to be able to witness this process." Attendees were thanked by Brown for their good behavior while seated for 3 hours as a parade of defendants charged with offenses over the weekend, including the protesters, were processed. But Deputy Prosecutor Michael Scarton requested during a recess that several chairs behind him, including Ambrose's seat, be vacated because talking and movement were distracting Scarton. Brown at first arraigned the defendants one by one. As it became apparent that all were entering the same plea, he arraigned them in groups based on the court to which their cases were assigned. Rather than waiting to hear one defendant's plea, he got most of the courtroom laughing by asking, "May I be so bold as to ask if you wish for me to enter a plea of not guilty on your behalf?" Haggerty, a longtime activist, was the first to be arraigned. He claimed police smashed his camera and arrested him for trespassing while he was acting as a journalist, documenting police arresting the tree sitters. He asked Brown to order police to return his videotape and the Herald-Times to produce a series of photos he said prove his innocence. Brown said he didn't have the authority to order the Herald-Times to hand over photos, but he would ask police to retain the videotape as possible evidence. Haggerty and the other 15 defendants told Brown they each want a jury trial and intend to represent themselves in court rather than hiring attorneys or requesting public defenders. After the arraignments, the protesters and their supporters conducted a meeting outside the Justice Building. On the way out, Ruth Hanford, 22, who identified herself as Spork when she was tree-sitting, made loud snorting noises like a pig to the county officer on duty at the Justice Building door. And obviously, the Bloomington Bluebird tree-sit has been broken up by the police, but there is obviously going to be ongoing activity around the Bloomington 16 trial. So stay tuned for that. Earth First Radio will have more news. Heading to the Caribbean, activists are headed to the Caribbean Whale Hunt. The Ocean Warrior, flagship of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, is sailing for the Eastern Caribbean from its berth in Miami, Florida, with a volunteer crew as the International Whaling Commission prepares to meet in London. There, with the votes of six Caribbean island nations purchased by Japan Fisheries Aid, observers consider it likely that the global ban on commercial whale hunting will come a step closer to being lifted. A proposed South Pacific whale sanctuary will be defeated, and pro-whaling nations will block any vote on the International Whaling Commission's competence to act to conserve small whales and dolphins. With the global threats to whales mounting and resistance to the demands of the whale-hunting nations melting into a slush of compromise, it comes down to this: individuals willing to act out of conscience and sweep aside the moral paralysis of governments and diplomats playing at politics while the world burns and whales die, said Sea Shepherd President Paul Watson, captain of the Ocean Warrior. That's the only thing that has ever saved whales. Watson, one of the co-founders of Greenpeace in the early 1970s, was the first person to put himself between a harpoon cannon and a whale. Sea Shepherd has targeted the islands of Santa Lucia and St. Vincent and the Grenadines, doubly notorious for taking Japan's bribes to vote against the whales at the IWC and for engaging in their own hunts of whales and dolphins. Their annual kill from multiple species, conducted side-by-side with whale-watching tours and unmentioned in Caribbean tourism brochures, is estimated to be in the hundreds, making it the largest cetacean hunt in the Western Hemisphere. The Protocol for Specially Protected Areas and Wildlife of the Cartagena Convention, ratified last year by many Caribbean states, was supposed to provide total protection for all whales and dolphins in the area, but a loophole was left open so that the hunts could continue. Pro-whaling states, including the Eastern Caribbean nations, continue to block any resolution affirming the IWC's authority over small cetaceans. The Ocean Warrior should arrive off the coast of Santa Lucia on July 23rd, the first day of the week-long meeting of the International Whaling Commission in London. We will make sure these governments know the eyes of the world are upon them when they are phoning in their voting instructions to their delegates in London, said Captain Watson. If you'd like more information, please contact the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, 22774 Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu, California, 90265. That's Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, 22774 Pacific Coast Highway, Malibu, California, 90265. And they do accept tax-deductible donations. Their number, 310-456-1141. That's 310-456-1141. Or visit www.seashepherd.org. Or you can send email to seashepherd@seashepherd.org. And moving to Colorado, forest fee protesters met with armed roadblocks. 50 people ticketed. Over 100 members of the West Slope No Fee Coalition were met with two roadblocks and armed forest rangers when they attempted to hold a demonstration against a new fee area at Canyon Creek near Ouray, Colorado on July 7th. Although offered the option of leaving with no penalty, an estimated 50 vehicles proceeded into the fee area and their drivers stood in line to receive federal citations. Extra rangers from throughout Colorado were called in to reinforce local staff of the Uncompahgre National Forest in the unprecedented law enforcement action. At the first roadblock, District Ranger Jim Free prevented demonstration organizer Robert Funkhauser of Norwood, Colorado, from holding protest signs and passing out literature to the stopped vehicles. According to Funkhauser, Free told him that protest activity was not allowed in the area around the roadblock. Since the vehicles were on a public roadway and had already been stopped by the Forest Service, I believe I had a First Amendment right to hold up the signs and offer literature, said Funkhauser. He plans to make the same argument in federal court in Grand Junction, Colorado, when he contests his ticket. Along with individual participants, demonstrators included organized contingents from the Seniors Outdoors and Creepers Jeepers Clubs of Durango. While all vehicles were stopped at the first roadblock and advised to either purchase a pass or turn back, these options were broadcast to the club members on CB radio. According to Seniors Outdoors leader John Montel, not one of our members chose to make a U-turn. At the second roadblock, participating vehicles were forced to pull to the side of the road and wait in line for one of the four officers to come and write their citations. Forest officials stated that the roadblocks were a routine exercise, not specifically directed against the No Fee Coalition demonstrators. However, several vehicles that were not involved in the demonstration drove past the roadblock and continued on into the fee area without being checked by the officers, who were very busy writing tickets to protesters, patiently waiting their turns. The roadblocks were dismantled and the rangers left the area around 3 p.m. shortly after the last coalition protesters had departed. The Western Slope No Fee Coalition opposes recreation fees for a number of reasons, including double taxation, commercialization of public lands, and the discriminatory impact on low-income citizens. Funding public lands with entry fees changes the focus from resource protection to maximizing revenue to mutually exclusive objectives. The coalition hopes to convince Colorado's congressional delegation to restore full funding to maintenance and management of federal lands through the appropriations process. Fee Demo is a temporary demonstration program authorized by Congress in 1996 and since renewed twice, currently set to expire next year. It is designed to test whether Americans are willing to pay for recreation in national forest parks, BLM lands, and fish and wildlife refuges. In addition to the new fees for recreation, already existing fees such as national park admission charges were dramatically increased, often doubled. The additional funds were intended to stay in the areas where they were collected to help with improvements and maintenance backlogs. However, budget cutbacks in recent years have forced the agencies to use large and increasing share of the fees collected for routine expenses like trash collection and toilet maintenance. A substantial share also goes to the cost of collection and enforcement of the fee programs. Demonstrators who receive citations face a potential fine of $25. They plan to plead not guilty in federal court in Grand Junction, Colorado, and claim that the fees apply to recreational use and that their protest was political speech protected by the First Amendment, not recreation. The courts have dismissed similar cases in other areas, but no court dates have yet been assigned to the Yankee Boy protesters. If you'd like more information, please contact the Western Slope No Fee Coalition, P.O. Box 403, Norwood, Colorado, 81423. That's the Western Slope No Fee Coalition, P.O. Box 403, Norwood, Colorado, 81423. If you'd like to give them a call, their number is 970-259-4616. That's 970-259-4616. Or J. Holt, J-H-O-L-T, at DurangoLive.net. That's J. Holt at DurangoLive.net for more information about the Western Slope No Fee Coalition. And moving to Mexico, a Mexican court has rejected an appeal by two Mexican peasant activists jailed 2 years ago while leading an anti-logging protester, their defense lawyer said. The court confirms the sentence of the two campesinos, Jesus Gonzalez, an attorney for Rodolfo Montiel and Teodoro Cabrera, told Reuters News. He added that lawyers plan to visit the federal court on Wednesday for more details of the ruling. Montiel, 45, and Cabrera, 50, were jailed in May of 1999 for 7 and 10 years, respectively, on marijuana and gun charges. Both men claim they were incarcerated for leading a peasant movement against illegal logging on the Pacific Coast state of Guerrero. International rights and environmental groups have rallied to their cause, showering them with recognition for their anti-logging campaign and labeling them political prisoners. In May, federal court agreed to review the case. President Vicente Fox, who took office in December, called for a review after meeting with defense lawyers and human rights groups. The pair are being held in Iguala, Guerrero State, about 122 miles south of Mexico City, founded a peasant environmental group fighting logging in Guerrero, which is among Mexico's poorest states. Rights activists said the two are being persecuted by sicaques, or local bosses, who are linked to rampant illegal logging and hold sway over the courts. Montiel and Cabrera won the Sierra Club's prestigious Chico Mendez Award in February. Last year, Montiel received a $125,000 environmental prize from the San Francisco-based Goldman Foundation, an award akin to the Nobel Prize in Ecology. And I want to thank Reuters News Service for that news. Well, let's take a little musical break here. We're going to listen to a CD that Uncle Dennis picked up at the Round River Rendezvous. This is a CD that I've been trying to get for a while. This is called At Night They Howl at the Moon. It's written by songs by Dana Lyons and John Seed. These are environmental songs for kids. But, you might enjoy this one. This one's called Have to Have a Habitat.
Here's a tune by Bill Oliver, our friend from Austin, Texas.
Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. You have to have a habitat to carry on.
Well, the forest is a habitat, a very special habitat. It's where the tallest trees are at. It's where a bear can scratch your back. Keeps the ground from rolling back. Keeps the oxygen intact. The forest is a habitat that we depend on.
Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat.
Habitat, habitat,
have to have a habitat. Have to have a habitat to carry on.
Well, the ocean is a habitat, a very special habitat. It's where the deepest water's at. It's where the biggest mammal's at. It's where our future food is at. Keeps the atmosphere intact. The ocean is a habitat that we depend on. Let's hear it now.
Habitat.
Well, the river is a habitat, a very special habitat. It's where the precious water's at, where people fish and muskrat. But when the people dump their trash, the rivers take the biggest rat. River is a habitat that we depend on.
Habitat, 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 habitat.
Different than foxes and rabbits affect the whole world with their bad habits. Better to love it while we still have it. A rat-a-tat-tat, our habitat's gone.
Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Have to have a habitat. Carry on. You have to have a habitat to carry on.
Quiet enough. You have to have a habitat to carry on.
You have to have a habitat to carry on. Real loud now. You have to have a habitat to carry on.
And Earth First Radio will be right back, so stay tuned.